Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Line 51551 is our text number. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock. Simon O'Donovan, good afternoon to you.
How are you, Katie? How's it going?
Simon, why do you think that we shouldn't be commemorating the RIC and the Dublin Metropolitan Police?
Well, Katie, just first of all, I suppose there's a discussion with my family here. We would have had family members killed during the War of Independence by Crown Forces. We're hoping to look forward to, I suppose, some events like 1916 there. It was commemorated a couple of years ago. We're looking forward to the family being able to honour these people correctly. And basically, we're just upset at how the first thing that the priority of the state is this year was to commemorate the Crown Forces that actually went out to kill them and subjugate them and arrest them and that. So that's our stance as a family here. We're a bit disappointed. You know, we're kind of looking forward to it. Now, our great-granduncle was actually killed in 1921.
Yeah, tell me about what your great-granduncle was...
Yeah, he was Matt Donovan. I suppose, like, I don't want to dwell too much on my own personal story, because I know there's probably listeners out there who have similar stories, and I feel
everyone's story is important. Tell us your own family story then. So
yeah,
Donovan, was it?
Matt Donovan, yeah. West Cork, again, very active area during that time. I'm a Dove, as you can hear.
Yeah.
Really proud of my West Cork lineage, and we would have heard stories of I suppose, the people down there, how they struggled against occupation and imperialism, and you heard of all the reprisals and all this type of stuff. So we would have been subjected to that, and basically Matt was a victim of that. Matt was out actually on his own. He was unarmed. It wasn't a combat situation. He was unarmed, and you may have heard of General Percival. Well, it would have been one of his roaming gangs came upon our great granduncle and shot him.
And these were these were the auxiliaries, were they?
They were. They're Crown Forces. You know, I always remember being told kind of Crown Forces because now again, different areas. I'm not a historian. I don't know what way things were in different areas, but down there was kind of not that much respect for Crown Forces at that time, whether it be RIC or auxiliaries or whatever name you put on them.
Yeah,
you know, it was kind of, it was hard times, I believe, you know, the stories that we were passed on, you know.
Can I put you what people might say? Because obviously there was a huge police force at the time, the RIC, if to leave it aside, at all the Dublin Metropolitan Police. But there was, like, I understand, about 14,000 police, Irish men in the RIC. And over 500 members of the police forces were killed during the War of Independence. Do they, I mean, obviously they have family members and ancestors coming down the line as well. Do they not deserve a day? Do they not deserve a mark of respect?
Well, Katie, I suppose it would be very, very typical of an Irish family like that. You know, I would have had people on the other side of my family in the British Army. So this isn't kind of hammering people's, or not, you know, families, and that can't commemorate their own people who are killed in war. Like, war is terrible, and struggle and conflict and that is terrible. People lose their lives. And I don't think anyone will deny anyone any right to remember any family members who died. But, like, there's a number of organisations, I believe. Now, I'm not a historian. I'm not well read up on this. I actually kind of read up just very quickly there when I was going to go online with yourself. Like, there's groups like the Harp Society, the Commonwealth Graves Association, the Abilities. These are organisations set up to actually commemorate and, you know, upkeep their graves of Crown Forces and that. And the thing that really kind of stuck in our family's goat was kind of that the priority at the start of the year, the start of January, the priority of the state was to come out and remember these people instead of the people who went out to fight for a republic. Like, we're meant to live in a republic, you know, so what other country would come out in a very definitive year of the struggle for that republic, and the first thing on the agenda is to commemorate the people who put it down, as opposed to the people who went out and struggled for a republic?
Do you think, in a sense, is it an issue of respect for your granduncle and for others like him?
Well, there's a respect element, obviously, as again, your personal respect, and that is it. And I wouldn't deny any people remembering their own families, and it's terrible and it's a tragedy, but I said it's a very political and emotive stance that the state have taken. It's kind of, I don't know what other country would do. It's very upsetting, you know, as a citizen, as well as being a family member, that this is the kind of stance that they're taking. I just, as a citizen of the country, I really feel let down, as well as having the family connection as well, if that makes sense, Katie.
I suppose, would people say, you know, it's 100 years, that's the reason that the commemoration is on the agenda at all, that it's time to move on, and that in the spirit of the Good Friday Agreement and the spirit of reconciliation, that this is a gesture that we should maybe get behind?
I don't think it's proper that the state came out, and particularly the timing of it. As I said, there's numerous groups and associations, and actually members of the government and individual ministers have already attended different commemorations to these people. So I just think, like, it's 1920 that we're commemorating. Just think of this year, right, what happened. We had elected officials killed, cities burned, we had people dying on hunger strike. The amount of stuff that happened, Bloody Sunday, like, you could go on all day, and I'm not a historian, but just, it sticks in my gut. And this is what the point I want to get out, and I know people won't be able to get onto the line, and there's other families out there that have similar stories. I just want to hammer that point home, that the priority of the state really doesn't reflect my family or my own people in my circles that I'm talking to this view.
Yeah, it's the priority. It's the timing and the priority.
Really,
the fact
is
that this seems to be the first.
It's never right, really, but I said, I can't understand it. I'd love to have somebody from the government that can come on and explain their rationale behind this. So I really can't see where they're coming from.
Will you stay on the line for me, Simon? Because I want to go to Joseph.
No problem. Thank you, Katie.
Joseph, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Kate. How are you?
You think this commemoration is a positive move? Am I right?
In a general way, my view is that, you know, the men that served in the RIC were Irishmen, by and large. There were other people from other states involved. I mean, Welsh people and Scots people, etc. But they were predominantly Irishmen. And they came from Irish families. And all you're looking at here is the difference in view, politically or otherwise, of people's allegiance. And I mean, the whole, in my opinion anyway, the whole purpose of the inclusivity that we talk about, you know, is to allow people to respect and honour their own particular tradition, be it nationalistic, be it royalist, be whatever, in a decent way. And I think the point about the government is that the government are trying to do this equally. So they're trying to, if you like, be fair to all sides of the communities in order to allow that to happen. That's my take on it. Now, I understand the pain. I'm not saying that people don't have pain from the various atrocities. I mean, there were atrocities right up to the Good Friday Agreement and after it, committed in the name of whatever belief that people had, royalist or indeed Republican. But these were all atrocities nonetheless. Now, the thing is that all families feel that pain. It doesn't matter what side of the coin they're on. They all feel the pain. They all feel the sadness and the loss of family, etc. And I mean, for a long time in this country, people were afraid to admit that they had family who had served either in British forces, even up to recent times, or people who had served in the RIC, you know, or any of the other organisations of the then operational state. So, you know, you have people in this country who have an issue with the Free State soldiers. And that was done during that time. They were Irishmen.
Is there an issue, though, a particular issue, Joseph, about the fact that the black and tans and the auxiliaries were drafted in? And that the RIC worked side by side with what was, I think, generally seen as a very hated force?
Well, I mean, I said this to your researcher earlier. I think every force, regardless of its flag, nationality or race, has people in it that are not nice. We have them in today's people that walk the streets. We have them in various sections of our state forces, probably. People who are not nice people. I mean, these people exist in every society. Amongst bad people, you have good people, and amongst good people, you have bad people. And yes, I agree, there were things done which were absolutely, you know, could not be reconciled, could not be excused, could not be argued out. But they weren't all bad people. I mean, there was quite a few people from Clare, I was telling you a research of this, who served in the Black and Tans.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, would you say people from Clare, particularly people from Clare, like, would be particularly royalist? I mean, do you know what I mean? Like,
I was surprised, I have to say. I saw a report of that today, that there was 883 Black and Tans Irish-born and 126 auxiliaries were Irish. I hadn't actually been aware that there was that many members of the Black and Tans were actually Irish-born.
And you see, this is the point, like, that you only need one bad egg in any barrel to make the rest of the eggs look bad. Do you know, I mean, that is really the situation. I mean,
well, I think Simon's point, Joseph, was Simon, do you want to just come back in there to Joseph and your point about the priority that you feel is being given to this particular?
I would, and Joseph touched on a few points there, a few good points, and a few ones that I'd like to pull him up on. Like that whole bad egg case doesn't sit well with me. Like, you know, and kind of saying that this is an Irishman thing, that's kind of really irrelevant. This was a political, ideological struggle. This was people who are fighting for a republic. In any anti-imperialist, anti-colonial struggle, yes, you will have the native people, someone who joined that force. It doesn't matter, they're still crown forces. Like the British War Cabinet at the time, Lloyd George, any of them, when they were going out to get somebody, to arrest somebody, to harass them, to do a reprisal, they didn't care what uniform they had, if they were RIC, auxiliary, black and tan. That was just an imperial occupying force. And to put them on some same level as people who weren't paid, like you're talking about people there, Joe, and again, no offence, and some of the stuff you said was spot on, but like, these people are paid. Like, you're taking money to go out and rat on your neighbours, to tout, to spy on people, to arrest people. You're putting them on the same pedestal, right, as people like my great-granduncle, who, these were like tenant farmers, people who are farm labourers, people who had small holdings, people who had nothing, but who went out because they had an ideal for a republic that is yet to be seen, by the way, as well. And that's the whole paranoia of, the state as well. This is a republic that has not been really achieved yet. And that's why it's very highly political.
Joseph?
Yeah, I can't disagree with some of those points, but I would say that some of the people who took the money were actually civilians in the population, you know, the people who did the ratting and stuff. I mean, you know, my experience is that, and as I said, you can look at it in almost any theatre of war, you can look at it in any civil or other conflict, like that there will be people who will do bad things on both sides of the coin. Do you know what I mean? On both sides of the coin. I mean,
Joe, can I get in there?
Any one side being victimised. You know, it's a problem on both sides.
Yes,
you know?
Simon, go on.
No, it's just you're starting to sound like a kind of a Donald Trump war candidate. There's good people, bad people in their current struggle there over Iran. They're talking about the good guys and the bad guys. Like this, like it was something that where people had to really nail their colours to the mast. You were either for the Republic and for standing by your neighbours and people, or you were for the occupation and the oppression of the nation. And I think those people who, and those families and those people who hopefully I'm speaking for today, who didn't get a chance to go on air, I hope that them people feel that I've had somewhat spoken up for them, because I think they'll really feel let down by the state in this coming year. If this now, hopefully, as I said, as the year goes on, the state may come out and they may have commemorations for some other events that would reflect the wider aspect of the struggle at the time. But I think coming out at the start of January, and the first thing that they throw in is to remember the Crown Forces, isn't a good sign of what's to come for people like myself and other people who have, I suppose, respect and honour for people who died for our republic.
Okay, stay with us, Simon. I want to go to Tom Mangan. Good afternoon, Tom.
Oh, good afternoon, Katie. How are you doing? I'd just like to ask the gentleman, especially who is in favour of commemorating the RIC. Are we the only country in the world that commemorates people like this? The RIC, in order to become a member of the RIC, first you have to swear an oath of allegiance to the Crown Forces and to the Crown in the United Kingdom. The second thing is, Do the Germans commemorate the SS? Do the British commemorate the German pilots that were shot down over Britain during the Second World War? Do the North Vietnamese commemorate the 53,000 Americans that were killed? Are we crazy? Absolutely crazy, commemorating people who were an enemy of the state, or at least the attempt to create a state. I think it's absolutely crazy. It's ridiculous. And personally, I think Charlie Flanagan is totally wrong in appearing at this commemoration, so-called commemoration.
Tom, did you have family fighting?
I did have family who were involved in some of the situations during that period. But I think their commemorations will be coming up a little later during the during this decade. But I do feel that commemorating people who were categorically against the attempts at Irish freedom from 1916 to 1922, commemorating them, I mean, we have a situation where we have put the names of British soldiers on our 1916 commemorations. Are we crazy? Have we lost our reason altogether? Good grief. The American Indians don't commemorate the Union forces, the United States forces that massacred them at Wounded Knee or anything like that.
Okay, will you stay there, Tom, because I want to put that to Jim Herlihy. Jim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Jim, you're with the Historical and Reconciliatory Police Society.
That's correct, yeah.
So could you answer Tom there, who says that it's absolutely crazy to commemorate the police of this time, of that force?
No, what's happening at this stage is people are talking about revisionism. When it comes to the RAC, something has to happen before it's revised. The RAC have been airbrushed completely out of history. And you take from, say, 1913, the decade of centenaries, up to the present day, there were 17 policemen killed in 1916, and there was absolutely nothing done commemorating those men. And the Harper Society took it upon themselves. Commemorate those men that were killed in 1916. And just the statistics alone, the manner in which the policemen were killed, overdoing it, is absolutely phenomenal. It's like the elephant in the room with the amount of casualties. 525 policemen killed during the War of Independence.
The amount of torture and so-called questioning by RIC and auxiliary black and tans who were actually working with the RIC, not the British Army, they were working with the RIC. The amount of torture, the amount of rape, the amount of amount of towns burnt out by these people. Why aren't we remembering this instead of remembering people who fought against the wishes of the Irish people for freedom from the United Kingdom?
I'm not condoning that for 1 minute. Just to make a bit of example.
Okay, Tom, let Jim come back in there, Tom. Yes, Jim.
Out cycling on cycle patrols, them going to court. When they were on foot, 80 of them were shot, walking to and from their barracks, attending church, seeking the assistance of a priest, seeking the assistance after a shooting incident, returning home from funerals of their colleagues, preventing a burglary or visiting a doctor. And a further 70 were assassinated, six in shops, 14 in pubs,
Heinrich
six
Himmler
in hotels.
Heinrich Himmler had a huge funeral. You know, when SS troops were shot by Polish resistance or French resistance, they had huge funerals as well. So what?
Do we commemorate the SS
because the RIC were no better than the SS? They were no better. They were working in league with the British and working with Crown forces to murder, to interrogate and to torture their own people. So commemorate them. To hell with that.
Well, I'll tell you how mixed up Irish history is. For example, there was one Dublin Metropolitan Police casualty in 1917, Inspector John Mills. There was a proclaimed meeting where one of the speakers, Colm Plunkett, was asked to desist from making a speech. And if he didn't, he would be arrested. Inspector John Mills was accompanied to the station when a young fella hit him down in the back of the head with a hurley and he died shortly afterwards. He was buried out in Mount Jerome Cemetery. Now, the person who admitted to that murder in 1932 admitted it on Garda-headed notepaper applying for his IRA pension. That'll tell you how confused the Irish system is.
Well, he applied for an IRA pension because he fought with the IRA. Once the Republic of Ireland, or at least the Irish Free State,
but
had been established.
We're talking about reconciliation. I'm just telling you what the half society did.
How much reconciliation is there between the Polish and the Germans with regards to the SS?
Or
for that matter, the Russians and the Polish, or the Russians and the East German. How much reconciliation is there?
Why should we always
have our noses in the backsides of the people who want to commemorate all this kind of stuff? It's unbelievable.
Tom, stay there, please. You've made that point, but stay with us because we're getting more calls in on this, and I want to go now to Paul O'Brien. Good afternoon, Paul.
How are you doing?
You also have a family history here that is relevant.
I do, yes. When Prosper's in County Kildare, my mother's uncle was taken by the Black and Tans. He was strung out of the back of a car. They slit open his stomach in front of his wife and his two children and started pulling out his insides. While he was still alive, they dragged him the length of the road and until he was dead. They then shot his wife, who was holding their youngest daughter, and the one round killed both of them.
We want to commemorate.
I think that's absolutely horrific, commemorating monsters like that. They
absolutely
were part of a foreign occupying force, occupying our country, subduing our people, that have wreaked havoc, murder, rape, pillage, everything for hundreds of years. And now they're going to commemorate them. That's
absolutely
traitors to Ireland.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Even the Germans don't commemorate the SS. And the Black and Tans and the RIC were no better than the
others. Okay, Tom. I want to go back to Jim, though, and respond to that.
I'm quite angry about this.
Respond to that from, because that obviously is an appalling atrocity that is personal to Paul O'Brien and his family. But I know there's so many of those stories in so many households around the country, Jim.
Yeah.
You can see why this is a very difficult moment for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it has been also for the RAC families who were, the time they went to bury their dead, they were intimidated, not able to attend even their funerals. I know several cases of it. I've been corresponding with the descendants of RAC for the last 30 years, literally on, if not on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. And there were several cases of things like that. And no mention about a memorial or anything to them.
Tell me about the RAC, Jim. They were... Am I right in saying that the officer class might have been drawn from maybe Protestant families?
Yes, the majority of officers would have been. First of all, they were 85,028 passed through the system between 1816 and 1922.
Yeah.
And in Dublin, you had the Dublin Metropolitan Police, and 12,566 served in the DMP. Mm-hmm. And they became a national police force in 1836 with the amalgamation of four different provincial police forces. And at that stage, the numbering system begins, and they ask who was serving in the previous police force. Then the numbers begin from there, one up to 85,028. And they were mostly farmer sons.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The vast majority of them were farmer sons. And
yeah, they were also murderers.
Royal
they were torturers and murderers.
Being in rising.
Sorry. Tom, if you can just hold off for a moment and I'll let you back in again, because I just want to find out what kind of families. Yeah. So, Jim, sorry, you were saying they're mostly farmer sons, labourers.
Mostly farmer sons, yeah.
And the rank and file would be drawn from Catholic families.
Oh, Catholic majority. The majority were Catholics.
And how was it viewed as a job back in the 1800s and in the early part of the century?
From the 1800s up as late as 19 and before the introduction of the Black and Tans and the auxiliaries, it was a very sought after job, and mainly by Catholics, because it was a pensionable job. And when they were disbanded in 1922, only 180 ex-RIC men went into the Garda Síochána. And the reason being is that the RIC got such good severance terms. For example, a person in 2 years service was given 12 years onto the service. And then their pensions were index linked after 1930.
And the other reason
so many went in because they joined the Garda Síochána was that those that went in, their pension was actually above the Garda rate of pay at the time, so they were promoted. A lot of them at the time actually acted as spies for Michael Collins.
And I wanted to ask you that.
Free State with promotions, and that's, of course, you had the Kildare Mutiny as a result of that then.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that because it is a complicated history, and I can imagine the RIC officers' rank and file embedded in communities must have been very torn when the War of Independence kicked off.
No, absolutely, there's no question all about it. And the very fact that so many of them were killed, and there's never a word actually ever been said about it. That's how the Harp Society was formed, where two retired members of the Garda Síochána took it upon themselves, Garda Pat McCarthy and Inspector Jerry Lovett, and went up on the 90th anniversary, which was the 31st of August, 2012, to Glasnevin Cemetery, and asked for prayers to be said for the members that were killed on duty. And it began from there. And as a result of it, we're absolutely inundated from descendants of RIC people and also people in the north of Ireland. And it's like history repeating itself. It's like RUC in the north.
Can I ask a question here?
On duty, and their widows.
Can I ask a question here? In 2022, are we going to commemorate the B Specials, the RUC, and the British Paratroopers? Are we going to put their names on any monuments that we put up to the people who were murdered by these people in Derry at that time? Are we going to put up monuments to them as well? Are we going to put their names on the monuments?
That's a matter for government.
Are you kidding me?
That's a matter for government.
And government is government of the people of this country. And if the people say no, then surely to God, that government must say no. Good grief! If we put up a monument to the murders in Derry at that time, are we going to put the names of the British paratroopers that were there?
Can I put you, Tom?
Who opened fire on innocent people?
Tom, can I put you, a question about, you're saying put up a monument to, but is commemorating actually celebrating in any way, or is it just marking and acknowledging something that happened and is part of our history?
We mark and acknowledge by the very fact that we do have British Army. Interment our graves in the Curragh Camp and other places around the country. There's one in Dublin, as far as I'm aware, as well as a German airman's monument there. We commemorate them by having graves. We don't commemorate them by having our government marching around.
Can I come in there, Kate?
Yes.
I'm losing track of it a little bit.
Okay, Tom, let Simon back in there, and then I'm going to have to go.
Oh, it's just to kind of maybe tie it up there, just what the two lads before saying. And in fairness to John there and his organisation, Harp, like, that's the way forward. He seems to be very well read up on the RIC, on Crown Forces and all that. And, like, more power to him. If he wants to do that, that's grand. You know what I mean? I've no problem with John or people like that.
Jim,
everything that Tom says there, 100% spot on. The only hope that we have, right, and if you look back in 2016 and some of the commemorations and events that were on, the best events that I attended, and there was some brilliant stuff put on, but were stuff done by the communities and the local communities, local people coming together, because I think people have really lost respect and faith in the state. If the state are going to come out and do this absolutely ahistorical, absolute whitewash of the whole thing, then I think, hopefully, I have faith in Irish people and communities north, south, east and west, that they can go out themselves and organise their own local commemorations and commemorate the actual people who stood up and fought against the biggest empire in the world. And I think that's the only hope that we have, hopefully. Because I have no faith for the state at this time.
Okay, we'll have more on this. 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Or joe@rte.ie. Now, we've got a lot of feeling, sentiment on both sides on in relation to this government plan to commemorate the RIC and the Dublin Metropolitan Police. Ruth Walsh, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Where do you stand on this one, Ruth?
I'm afraid I'm for it. You know, I really believe that we have to acknowledge that we were a colony and that a lot of these men were, it was a job. And a lot of them, particularly in the country, were sons of small farmers. Remember the great Tom Crean, his brother, Morris, was killed in Mallow, I think. He was a member of the RIC. It was a job. If you were a small farmer's son, it was only one person got the farm. I think looking back now and condemning these people who needed to live and to work and to have an income is unfair. And I draw particular attention to Tralee, where when Caseman was picked up and brought into the RIC barracks in Tralee, which is now the Tralee barracks, Tralee Garda Station, the kindness of the RIC officer, whose name I'm afraid eludes me now, and his wife was absolutely outstanding. She knocked up the butcher's wife, the butcher, to get him a steak on Good Friday because the poor man was starving, and they couldn't have been nicer to him. And in fact, in acknowledgement of that, Caseman gave him the only item he had left, which was a silver cigarette case. He was then, a message was sent to Austin Stack to say, you know, if you'd like to come and collect Mr. Caseman. My understanding, and of course, obviously, it's subjective, is that he, if it was not followed up because partly they didn't know what to do with Caseman. He was a bit difficult to know where to place him. So he was carried to the railway station in Tralee with the RIC officers who had to hand him over. My grandfather had a business in Rock Street in Tralee, and he was not at that time in favour of independence. He did later vote for the treaty, but he saw Caseman and he felt very sorry for him. Now, that poor man, that RIC officer, had to emigrate to England with his very large family as a response to the change in attitudes that came later. But at that moment in time, their kindness to Caseman was recognised by Caseman. And I think you need to look at that. The second case is in Dublin, is the first Dublin Metropolitan police officer who was killed was totally unarmed and turned to I think it was Sean Ryan, and said, "What are you at, Sean Ryan? And go home." And for his troubles, he got killed. He was not armed. And the family of Sean Ryan stepped forward during the 1916 commemorations and laid a wreath for that man, O'Brien, at Dublin Castle in recognition that that was a terrible, sad thing to have happened to this man in Dublin Metropolitan Police who was only doing his job. So we have to be generous and look at things in their complexity instead of taking up black and white views, you know, about these things. They're always more complex than they look.
Indeed, Ruth. And I know there's a similar story from my own hometown of Mistol, where the local RIC officer there refused to go along with orders from the military commanders to shoot on site. And the story goes that his family paid a very heavy price for that as well. But listening to Simon there before the break and Tom, you know, people, particularly people with direct family connections to people who had been killed in the War of Independence and had, you know, stories that have been passed down through the generations. You can see that it is a very difficult one for families.
Look, I have a different feeling about the Black and Tans. They were brought in to stir up, even if some of them were Irish. Probably a lot of them were traumatised, you know, after World War One, you know, so they were in no fit state. They weren't trained policemen. My own grandfather, in Lestole, was thrown down the stairs and he wasn't involved in politics at all. So they threw their weight around. So I have less sympathy for them. I just feel quite strongly about the RIC and the Dublin Metropolitan. And to lump them in with the carryout of the Black and Tans, where they were really unleashed and just let do what they liked, is not a fair comparison. So I think it's not fair to put them all into the same category. That's all I'm asking for, is a little bit of, you know, what's the word, you know, nuance about this. You know, that they, lot of those were in the RSC and didn't see at that moment in time that we were going towards independence until it happened, you know. So that's all I'm saying.
Ruth,
don't lump them together.
Stay with us, Ruth, because all these points of view are very interesting. And like, I want to go to Gerard Devereux now. Good afternoon, Chair.
Hello, yeah.
You wouldn't agree with Ruth there, would you?
No, I wouldn't. Now, look, I can get some of the points that she's making, but, you know, I'm sure there was lovely people in the SS as well. You know, we can all make up, you know, talk about nice people and in certain organisations, but at the end of the day, what the big thing that people seem to be forgetting here is that organisations can have commemorations for the RIC and the Black and Tans, and they're, look, go on off and you're entitled to do that. What I disagree with is where the state is having an official commemoration for these people. So what the state is saying is that these people are as equal to those who fought for Irish freedom. And that's where I have an issue. And I don't think any other country in the world would even think about going down this route. But to me, like, I was on your show a number of years ago when it was announced that Glasnevin Cemetery were putting up the wall. And I rang in and I debated with, I think it was the chairperson of the Glasnevin Trust at the time. And they said that this was about, you know, that all deaths were equal. And I argued with them at the time. Like, that's like saying, you know, that an SS guard in Auschwitz who died, say, in a rebellion was the same, or his death is the same as those who died there.
I just say, though, Jaron, you're not the first person on the show. Tom Mangan was making the same correlation earlier. But I think there'll be people listening out today who will be family members of former members of the RIC, and they find it extremely disrespectful and hurtful to be comparing them, their relatives, to members of the SS. Surely we're talking about two different scenarios.
No, what I'm trying to say is this thing about that all deaths are equal. It, you know, when you look at that, you know, and this is what the Glasnevin, this is what I think Charlie Flanagan is about as well. It's trying to see, to me, Fianna Gael are embarrassed by the sort of all these anniversaries. And I think what they done was they came up that
why would they be embarrassed by all these anniversaries?
Because Charlie Flanagan and Fianna Gael are anti-Republican. Let's call a spade here. They hate Irish Republicans. And they are embarrassed by this. So what they did was they linked in the Battle of the Somme with the 1916 Rising. And this year, you know, the big anniversary of, you know, the Tan War and stuff like that, they've linked in the Black and Tans and the RIC. You know, and for people to say that the Black and Tans were not the RIC, they were. They were a subdivision of the RIC. And, you know, another thing I seen was that people were saying, well, if it was just the RIC, it wouldn't be that bad. But, you know, the RIC, you know, during even the Great Hunger, evicted people from their homes. They beat people to death on strike in Dublin in 1913. So to try and say that they were an innocent organisation and, you know, oh, we were only doing our job. You know, were they only doing their job when they shot dead the Lord Mayor of Cork in 1920? You know, and I just think for the state to officially commemorate them is a step too far. Let, you know, HARP and other organisations, let them have their memorials and stuff like that. And that's what a democracy is about, even though I mightn't agree with it. But for the state to put them on the same level as those who fought for Irish freedom, which we haven't achieved yet, by the way, you know, still we don't have the 32-county Irish Republic. But for the state to say the RIC and the Black and Tans are as equal to Dan Breen and all others who fought for Irish freedom, that's where I say, no, you're wrong. And I predicted this a few years ago. I was laughed at when I rang in that time and I was told, oh, no, you're going too far. There's no way, you know, we're going to commemorate the Black and Tans, but I was right, and this is what they're doing, and I just think it's a step too far.
Well, I'm sure, and I don't have Charlie Flanagan or any member of the Fine Gael party here to defend themselves, but I'm sure they would say that we have to be mature, we have to move on, we're not celebrating anything, we're just marking a part of our history that should be marked.
No, but give me an example of where that's been done anywhere else in the world. You know, where every country is going to mark and more or less celebrate those who fought against its freedom. I can't see where that. And I know there've been loads of examples before me. Like it'd be like putting, you know, the British commemorating the Nazis and stuff like that. You know, I'm not saying that the ROIC or not. I'm just trying to make the sort of point that where does it stop? And as one of your previous callers said, the man of Harp started mentioning the ROIC there. So now this is, where does this stop? ROIC, ROUC, British paratroopers. Like, so he wants to commemorate people who colluded with MI5 in Dublin Monaghan in the Miami Show Band. Like, where does this stop? You know, where does it stop?
Stay with us, Ger. Do stay with us. I want to go to Patrick McCarthy, who... Did you organise the first mass for the commemoration of the RIC, Patrick?
Yes, this is me, Patrick McCarthy. If I live another month, I'd be 87 years of age.
Fair
I joined
play
on Gardashire Corner 65 years ago, of the year gone by. I was stationed in Granard, my first station, as a recruit. Now, in 1955, a former RIC man returned from Newry County Down, where he had been living, and gave me a harrowing account of all his colleagues that was murdered in the Longford Westmeath Division in 1920. Now, the worst case of all those was an inspector, Philip Kelleher. He was the son of a Dr. Jeremiah Kelleher from Cork. Dr. Kelleher was based in Macroom. He was the county coroner back in during the British regime, up to 1916 or 1920, at that period. Mm-hmm. His son was a captain in the British Army. He returned to Macroom on holiday in 1920 for a short period, and he was offered a job as an inspector in Granard. Now, during the reign of Dr. Jeremiah Keller, he went out of his way day and night to look after Republicans whenever he was called upon to treat them for their sickness, whatever they were, and he never charged them. And he felt that by doing this, that his son would be safe, sending him to Granard as an inspector. He was only 23 years of age. In October 1920, he was shot dead in Granard, County Longford. He was a single man. Now, that was the worst case that I came across. But there were other ones as well. When I organised the first mass, on the 28th of February 2010, it took 3 months to do it. There was a large crowd of people that turned up, a lot of relatives of RIC, and I was told another case there where this policeman, an RIC man, was shot in Granard. He was in civvies, and he had a wife and four children, and she got a letter in the post to say, "Get out or we'll burn you out." And the woman who told me that got the first-hand information from the widow of that policeman. So,
can I ask you, Patrick,
yes,
as a former serving member of An Garda Síochána,
yes,
would you regard the RIC members as brothers in arms? Is that how you would look on that force and the men who served in that uniform?
What did you say? Regard them as what?
As brothers in arms. That They're brothers who served a police force just as yourself.
Exactly, because I'll tell you another thing about it. There were seven bishops, the ruled Catholic diocese of this country, were the sons of RIC men. The last bishop to serve in the Meath diocese, the Catholic Meath diocese here in Mullingar, I knew him well, Bishop John Kine. He died in about 1966. He was the son of an RIC constable. The RIC set up St. Joseph's Young Priest Society, and they educated hundreds of priests that sent them out across the world. They contributed out of their wages every month into that society. I contributed when I joined the Garda 65 years ago into that thing, and where there was young men ordained priests and sent out across the world. But the RIC were the ones who started it. Now, what do you think of that?
But what about then when you hear those other stories, the bad side of the stories, people who would say that the RIC were involved in terrible atrocities, not just in the War of Independence, but during the 2013 or the 1913 lockout and during the famine years?
Yes, I agree that some of them did some bad things, what happened was, when there was a married constable, 40 to 50 years of age, that had a large family, was shot dead by the IRA, the auxiliaries of the Vacantans retaliated on the Republicans. And it was wrong. That's right. I mean, I've attended the funerals of my colleagues that were shot by the IRA. Why did they shoot my colleagues? We weren't British. You know, this is the thing I put. But that's from that mass that I organized. It was, I contacted Jerry Lovett. He was a secretary of our association. And we formed our committee to go forward for a memorial. And that's what I would like to see done.
And the people who turned up at that first mass, was there a sense, Patrick, that this was something that had been almost like a shameful part of the family history for many of them, that they couldn't speak about it?
They could, exactly. I meet with the relatives of RAC seamen all over the country. They ring me here at my house from far away as Belmullis, Cork and everywhere else around the country, and they said, this is a marvellous thing what you've done. We could never speak to say that I was the daughter or son of an RAC man. They were scared of this. And there are relatives still. There is a priest at the moment who is right in Australia, a Father McGeerty. He was the son of an RAC man. He died and his remains have gone to brought back to Ireland for burial. I've met that priest. He has attended our ceremony many times, and I've met his brothers and sisters. And they're delighted at what we are doing to have a memorial for the RAC.
And yeah, and what will, like, the fact that the government will be putting, you know, its name to and supporting a memorial for the RAC and for the Dublin Metropolitan Police, what will that mean for the relatives that you've been coming across?
The relatives would be saying, look, what I can tell you is this, and I know it for a fact, there will be people, after the disbandment of the RAC, they're spread across the world. If this memorial goes up, there will be people coming from America, from all over Europe, coming back. The relatives of RAC that left here, they were scared, and they will come back to this memorial. You know, this will be a big occasion for the relatives of the RAC and the DNP.
Okay.
Because they're scattered across the world. There are people in America, judges in the courts, that are the relatives of RAC men.
Okay, will you stay there, Patrick? I need to take a break, but I've got some more callers who might have a thing or two to say about what you're saying after these.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Ethna, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Katie.
You were listening to Patrick there before the break talking about the RIC and how their memory needs to be commemorated, and so many families, it will mean so much to them. How do you respond to that, Edna?
Oh, I would say I'd have no argument about the RIC or the Dublin Metropolitan Police being remembered. But there was a previous caller who said, you know, do it privately or by an association. It's the imprimatur of the state that I find dreadful, and the association with the Black and Tans, not the RIC.
Tell me your own family history here.
Well, I'm originally from Cork, and I was lovingly looked after at times by two grandaunts, and they, as very young women, had been terrorised by the Black and Tans where they lived in a street in the centre of Cork. And they knew from things that were said to them by the Black and Tans that it was known that their two brothers were on the run. They were members of the IRA, and the women were terrorised constantly, and you know, she spoke about it very, very reluctantly. Oh, and I was in the end sorry that I pressed her about it, because I was interested in the history and we weren't taught anything about it in school. So she told me that the Black and Tans went up and down the street every night in a tender, some sort of wagon, shooting at random. And she said they were always drunk. You know, they were absolutely completely out of control. And they terrorised Cork, but it was the burning of Cork that really brought them to their knees, because she said the poverty was just indescribable afterwards. And she was a very strong woman. She was unusual for her time in that she was a landlord, and she managed a whole street of houses. But, you know, it was never officially to be known because the women just didn't have the control in those days. But she broke down when she recounted those events to me, and she said they barricaded themselves in the house basically, and they black and tans during the day. They one spring day they put some rugs out on the lawn at the back to air them, and the black and tans came along and they bayoneted the rugs and ruined them, but they were convinced that they were IRA fellas, as they called them, hiding under the rugs.
Wow. You could write a book on all of these individual stories, couldn't you? It's like the memory.
But, I mean, what I find so appalling is that the government wishes to officially commemorate the terrorising of the citizens of Ireland. And, you know, the black and tans, a lot of them were made up of the contents of British prisons, and they were let loose on the people of Ireland, and they were supposedly in the control of the RIC, but as far as I could tell from what she told me, they were just completely out of control. And she said that, my aunt said, they felt they were lucky to get away with as little as they did. And I mean, they came from what I suppose could have been looked at as a divided community or a divided family, because her twin uncles were commanders in the British Navy. Yet her brothers were on the run, and her other brother who worked in Cork, his best friend had been Kevin Barry. And, you know, she said they were always banging on the door saying, we know you're Barry's friends. So they seem to know the whole family.
You have the whole War of Independence in that time in your own, wrapped up in your own family story there, Ethna.
Absolutely, yes. And I would just stress that what I find wrong is that our government is choosing to commemorate it officially.
Well, can I put that, Patrick, can I put that to you, that you can't, if you, once you start talking about commemorating this period and the police force at the time, which was the RIC and the Dublin Metropolitan Police, you can't avoid the fact that they were in league for that period with the black and tans and the auxiliaries.
Maybe so, but the fact of the matter is, policemen are there for to protect the public, and when they were attacked, and they on many occasions they retaliated afterwards for the that. So I believe that our own Irish soldiers that went out and fought in the Great Wars, they're commemorated all over Europe and in this country. Our own soldiers that fought in the two wars, the 1939, or the 1418, and the 1939-45 war.
And but I suppose they weren't fighting against Irish people, their own people who were, you know, involved in the struggle for independence, people would say.
Well, I feel we're in the decade of commemoration, reconciliation and commemoration. At least there's great peace in Northern Ireland now. There's no bombs going off, and it's a great thing. So I feel that it's time to reconcile with our differences, what we had in the past, and have this memorial, because it will attract a lot of the relatives of the RAC and the DNP from across the world to come back to Ireland to see where their loved ones died.
But is there not something to be said for leaving, in some cases, sleeping dogs lie, and not maybe, stoking the embers of something that is still very painful for a lot of families?
Well, it might, but I'm sure the people that's against this we'll soon forget about it. I think that's the way I think it is. In the Northern Ireland, look at the peace and quiet that's there today, with people, thousands of people travelling up and down daily and getting on with their lives.
So you think that the opposition to this now is a storm in a teacup?
I do, exactly. A storm in a teacup. It seems it's time to forget about it. We're in reconciliation, and it's time to have this memorial. It was my ambition from 2010 to have this memorial because of what I heard from that policeman in Granard all those years ago.
Okay.
So I feel it's time for the doer to forgive and forget.
Okay, Jim, would you obviously go along with that? But you heard from a lot of our callers there, and they're very genuine, heartfelt, strong feelings about
absolutely,
this.
Absolutely, and there are families, of course, that have both RIC and Republicans, and both sides of the family and families have been split. And if we're like splitting hairs now at this stage, what's going to happen with the next commemorations with the Civil War? Just on the matter of reconciliation, I thought it was a wonderful occasion where in our Cairn parish above in Roscommon, the memorial that they put up for 1916, the commemoration, which I thought was extraordinary, it has our Cairn remembers those from the parish who lost their lives in the wars 1914 to 1923. And on that memorial are members of the IRA, those who served in World War One, and members of the Royal Irish Constabulary. And two of those casualties, RIC casualties, were a father and son who, post-truce, post-disbandment even of the RIC, were taken out and shot. And the sad part of it also is that another one of the father's sons had been killed in Dublin. But I thought it was an extraordinary gesture of reconciliation that this could happen in the parish and taken at parish level. And we have to go back to that level because people have to live with one another.
Okay, thanks.
And just as regards epitaphs, in fact, one of the first chiefs of police in Ireland, Sir Richard Wilcox, he's buried in Chapel Hill, at Church of Ireland Cemetery. And he has a very simple epitaph, and he says, "Epitaphs on tombs are monies vainly spent. A man's good name is his own monument." So whoever goes up on the name, it's how they live their lives. It should be commemorated and remembered, not eulogised. There's no glory in all of this. I spent 30 years in Blarney Garda Station, and the station was attacked in 1920. And the end result is that the sergeant who defended the station and the IRA man who led the attack in the station are buried about 10 graves away from one another in St. Finbar Cemetery. So people, the equality at the end of the day is they're all dead and that's it. And let every organisation remember their own. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I suppose, but I think the issue people are having is that this is the state putting their name to it. Stay with us, Jim, though, because we are getting a lot more calls in on this, but I do have to take another break. 51551 is our text number.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we're getting a huge reaction to this plan by the government to commemorate the RIC and the Dublin Metropolitan Police. Councillor Niall Ring, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie.
A lot of our Dublin listeners, of course, will remember you as our former Lord Mayor in Dublin, Niall Ring. You're not supportive of this move by the government?
Absolutely not. And as the previous speakers have said, the fact that it's coming from the government, and what people have to remember is the RIC were enforcers of British rule in this country. And I'm sitting here in Ballybock, Katie, and I can actually see Crow Park from my office window. And my family are all from Ballybock. And on Bloody Sunday 1920, my grandfather and his brothers went into Crow Park after the RIC mainly had opened fire on the people at the Dublin Tipperary match and killed 14 people. They took a young boy out of Crow Park, Joe Traynor was his name, brought him back to our house on Sackville Gardens. Joe Traynor bled to death on our kitchen table. They brought him out and he was taken by ambulance to Jervis Street Hospital. Obviously, he was one of the victims of people murdered on Bloody Sunday. The following day, my grandfather had gone on the run. Three of his brothers were subsequently taken the following day and interned in Ballykinler internment camp in County Down. So our family paid a huge price. But that was a direct, and people try and say it's the Black and Tans were responsible for Bloody Sunday. All the facts point to the RIC. And the RIC collaborated and facilitated the Black and Tans and the auxiliaries in all of the atrocities they committed during the War of Independence. And for our government now to be somehow sanitising that, and this is revisionism gone mad, that we somehow have to commemorate people who directly facilitated the murder of Irish people during the War of Independence. They were the enforcers of British rule. It's perfectly plain that's what they were. And we should not be celebrating or commemorating their actions at all.
But what about, you know, what Patrick was saying there, what Jim was saying about this was an Irish police force. It was in situ for almost 100 years. It was the sons of small farmers up and down the country in the main. And they were carrying out their duty. And many of them, there may have been atrocities. There may have been some members involved in atrocities. But by and large, this was members of a police force carrying out orders.
Carrying out orders to suppress the Irish people, to stop their quest for freedom. That's what they were doing for the entire, I think it was 130 years they were in existence. That's what they were doing. That was their remit. It wasn't to promote Irish freedom. It was to suppress Ireland and its freedom. And when I think of this commemoration, and we've the decades of commemoration, and some of the events have been absolutely magnificent. And when I look back to 1916, when the people of Ireland as a unit rose up and said, we want to celebrate the men and women of 1916 who got us our freedom, effectively started the process where we got our freedom. And even last year when I was Lord Mayor in January, we're coming up to 101 years of the first Dáil. The current Dáil is a direct descendant of that first Dáil. Do you think that first Dáil would have had any truck with the RIC or the auxiliaries or the Black and Tans? Absolutely not. And this government, for some reason, in some attempt at outrageous revisionism, are now trying to sanitise the RIC. Somehow it was our police force. It was not our police force. It was the police force of the British government who were oppressing the Irish people.
OK, stay with us, Niall. Evelyn. Good afternoon. Hello. Good afternoon, Evelyn.
How are you?
You'd be on the same page as Niall Ring there.
I would, yeah. Yeah, I think it's an absolute disgrace. I mean, I live in Drogheda, and we've Moran's Terrace and Halston's Terrace, two young men that were taken out of their homes, family men, and murdered by the Black and Tans. And my mother came from a farming background in Midlouds, and they hammered down their door one night and took her older brother out, Johnny. He was only 14, and he was tall for his age. They said he was on the run. You know, he was one of the Republicans, which he wasn't. But anyway, her father was a farmer. He took a hay fork to them and they ran off. They were drunk anyway, but they murdered their neighbour, the next door neighbour who lived down the road, a simple man. There was something wrong with him. They just took him out and shot him in the head and threw him in a ditch because they were on a killing spree. And, you know, that man that was on trying to make out that all the RIC fellas were great Catholics and priests and everything. I'm sure the Republican people were great Catholics as well. The RIC were on the side of the British. They were doing the work of the British. They were informing. They were evicting. They were arresting, torturing people. And they're trying to say they were the forerunners of the Garda Síochána. And now I find a lot wrong. I mean, look at Maurice McCabe scandal and everything. I mean, there's a lot of corruption in the Gardaí. But on the whole, I think this government's just lost the run of itself. And it's an absolute disgrace to commemorate the oppressors of the Irish people. And that is exactly what they were. They were in collusion with the British forces. They were a British police force. They weren't an Irish police force. They were in it for the money and the pensions, all right. But they were traitors to their own people. And that's all I have to say.
I'm going to go to Anne. Thanks for that, Evelyn. I'm going to go to Anne O'Driscoll now. Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. Excuse me.
Yeah, you take issue with what Evelyn was saying there.
Well, I feel that we have all moved on in the last 20 years maybe to look at everybody's point of view, and I see them as a force who were keeping law and order in the country. I don't think Irish people were noted for their compliance with any law and order. And obviously somebody, the British were in power, somebody has to keep the population. When you look at a police force, there's a lot of help being the population as well as keeping law and order involved in it. But yes, my grandfather was a farmer's son and his career is down as a farmer, but obviously if you were in a big family and there was a small farm, you had to get a job somewhere else. And I was making the point that
joined the RIC as a young man.
He joined the RIC as a young man, yes, and he served from 1896 until 1920. he had to resign because at that stage they were living in Drumlish, County Longford. His wife was a local teacher, and they were threatened by the IRA that the house would be burnt out. So he resigned. But he had long service, and there were two medals that he got when he was working in Dublin. He was on duty in Dunleary when King George and King Edward came on a visit, and they all got the RIC on duty at the time, got
medals,
commemorative medals at the time. But yeah, then he drew a pension until he was 91. He retired when he was 50. And my grandmother got a widow's pension for another 7 or 8 years after that.
Can I ask you, Anne? Can I just ask you, in terms of, we've heard a lot of people talking about that there was almost like a shame in some families that they had this background family connection with the RIC. What was the sense in your family about your grandfather's career?
Well, I think they were proud of the fact that he served. His service record shows that he gave very good service and that he had no complaints against him, which apparently was unusual, according to the person who sent the record to my mother. That was unusual for somebody to go through their whole career with no black marks against them, if you like. And somebody pointed out there are bad eggs in every fort. And it just is a fact that the British were in power at the time. And naturally, their police force had to keep law and order. But somebody had to keep law and order, because originally we were tribes that fought each other, clans that fought each other all the time. So
you think it's right and proper that the RIC be commemorated?
Well, I don't think anybody is glorifying. I think they're remembering the people who served in the RIC and who kept law and order in the country for 100 years or whatever it was.
Okay.
I know my grandfather didn't agree with the treaty, and he wouldn't have joined the DMP. But anyway.
Okay, and thanks for that. Thank you
Thank you very much. I just think people are being very unreasonable. We're looking at things from a totally different time now. It's like the people who fought in the First and Second World War were thought very badly of for a long time, and then people realised that, well, some of them served because they wanted to improve our situation here. They thought they'd catch Britain offside.
Indeed.
So, but anyway, thank you very much.
It's time to move on, is what you're saying.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I just want to get Kevin in. Kevin Morrell, how are you?
I'm very well indeed, thank you. And thank you for having me on.
We're nearly out of time, Kevin, so I'll just get to the nub of it. Are you for or against this proposal?
I'm against the proposal.
Is that an English accent I hear there, Kevin?
Oh, indeed I do, yes. I've lived here a long time. I once heard someone on the radio say I'm Irish in everything but my accent. I don't know if my neighbours would agree with that, though. But the thing is, there is actually a memorial. I was over 20 years ago visiting London, and in Westminster Cathedral, that's a Catholic one, not the Protestant one, there is a memorial to the RIC in one of the side chapels. I was looking around the cathedral, and I nearly jumped out of my skin when I saw it, and there were plaques for the Irish regiments, well, at least for the Catholic ones, in the cathedral. So I'm quite surprised at that. A couple of other things to say. I live in a house which was burnt down by Crown forces. Locally, they say it was the Tans, but I actually think it was a bit higher up than the Tans, because there were non-uniformed people in charge of the operation. And
Kevin, I'm going to cut across you, and apologies, but we're nearly out of time. But your general sense is that this is not the RIC should not be commemorated.
Thing to do. Now, I was just going to say the uncle of the lady who sold me the house was shot dead in the porch, and her father was shot in the back running away, and he hid in the stream, and they pulled him out and they got him down to Nina Hospital, and when the bullet was removed, the surgeon said, "Could I keep it for a souvenir?" And he said, "Sure, doctor, I've had it long enough, you're welcome to it."
Okay, I'm going to have to let you go, Kevin. I've got to go to the last break, but thank you for that, Kevin Morrell there. Yo,
Duffy. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And that is all we have time for today. Really extraordinary how, you know, 100 years on, feelings are still running so high on both sides of this argument. And of course, what you hear there is the family history and people being told these stories on their mother's knee and it's being passed down through the generations. But that's where we have to leave it today. Our BCO was Laura Lee Davies. Padder Carney was on sound. Research was by Richie Byrne. Angus McNally produced. And Ray Darcy is next.